Suicide prevention in early September. Suicide awareness has to be in the day-to-day conversations. 24/7, 365. We want to keep hope alive. I'm declaring the whole year for prevention and awareness. Listen.
We check in, check back, say the name. Space.
Hello there. It is so good to be back. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Then Forgiveness. And today we are here with my guest, Cindy Liu. Thank you for joining us, Cindy. I am really excited because as much as this
was my pleasure, thank you.
Heartbreaking. And I know your hearts will go out to Cindy and her family, and we will talk about that. But what I'm excited about is the fact that it ends in hope and renewal. And Cindy has written a book that really provides not just some guidance, but useful tools that can help you get to life after. And after can be a lot of things. But I'm going to let Cindy give us the lowdown on Cindy. And I'm only going to say two things before I turn it over. And that is, Cindy is, or rather has been, a service person. She has been in the military. She's been a military medic. There's parachutes in there. There's all kinds of everything. She is an award-winning businesswoman. She was in the Millionaire Club. She has done a gazillion things. And that's not why we're here, and it's not why she wrote the book. And it's not the person she is today. Because to me, there is so much more to Cindy now. And so I want to share, Cindy, you go ahead and take this away.
Wow. Thank you, Elaine, for having me on your podcast. This is a very special podcast, and I don't take this lightly, and I'm honored to be here to share my story with people. So thank you for that. So I'm Cindy Little, and I'm from Kempville, Ontario, which is 30 minutes south of Ottawa, for those who don't know Ontario or Kempville. And it's a nice little town, and it's where our son's memorial bench is off of the Rideau River. And it was on the bench where I, at the one-year anniversary mark of losing our son, that I sat there and I thought, what am I supposed to do with my life now? I was 51 years old. I was going through perimenopause at the time. And that's when women start wondering, what am I left here to do? Or what is going to fill my cup up after losing a child? And then the book came to my mind. So that's where I was reflecting on life, and I was growing through grief in nature on this memorial bench that my friends raised money to help provide for our family. And the story began when the cops showed up at our door on October 25th, 2021. It was 5 hours after a car accident. And when they came to our door and said that our son was dead, I said, no, our son was going to his first day on the job. Like, it can't be our son. And that's when
absolutely.
I realized that our
absolutely.
Life was going to change forever.
There is nothing at all like the loss of a child. And your response is so, to me, natural. The first thing when they tell you someone who shouldn't be the one to die, it's gone, is denial. It's absolutely denial. We've all done it. You and your husband,
yeah.
I'm really glad that you were both together at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. My son was 21 when he passed, and our daughter was 24. And the next worst shock or the next worst tragedy was calling our daughter to actually texted her to say that there was an emergency because I couldn't call her because then, like, we would have had to tell her over the phone. And we didn't want to do that. So we had her and her fiance at the time, they're married now, to come to our house. And they saw the cop cars out front and they said, "What's going on?" And we said, "Dylan was in a car accident and he died."
Yeah.
And we couldn't really give the information any easier than that. And it's the exact same way that the cops gave it to us. When they said it was very point blank in one sentence, "Your son, Dylan Little, died in a car accident." That's how they delivered the news to us. It's like they didn't sugarcoat it. They just said it outright. And that we weren't even sitting down. My husband and I had just called him up from the basement and the cops were in our doorway and they wanted to come in. And I was wondering, why do they want to come in so bad? They kept asking, "Is your husband home?" I said, "Yeah, he's home. And can we speak with both of you?" And then when they came in and they told us the news within the first sentence out of their mouth, it was like such a shock. And I didn't believe them. I thought, no, this can't be right. Like this, our son was just driving to a new job that morning when it happened. And my husband received the news quicker than me. He accepted it quicker than me.
I'm sure that's not something that you saw a lot, Cindy. I just want the audience to know that Darren is also military. And both Cindy and Darren have served our country very well. Yeah. Take all the time you need. I also want the audience to know. Yeah, absolutely. And it only happened in 2021.
It's the whole part of the story, right?
Very, very soon. Yes.
Yeah, you see a very strong man like my husband, right, like that? Yeah, that was the hardest, I think one of the hardest things. And then even through the grief and our transition, the journey through grief, just seeing my husband be as emotional was something new for me because he's always been so strong and guarded with his emotions and seeing him.
Well, I can absolutely imagine. I grew up in a military family as well. Yeah, my father's in the Air Force and he was in the Air Force in Britain before we came to Canada and he joined the Canadian Air Force basically pretty soon after we got here. So I understand the ethos, if you will, but also that male role in the military was always the stand-up guy, the rock, the person who's so in charge. And to your point about Darren, I was 12. We were in Scotland, and to this day, I don't know what happened. Middle of the night, we were staying with my grandparents, and my mother was sitting on the side of the bed beside my father. And my father's shoulders were shaking. It took me a few minutes to realize he was crying, and it completely knocked my world off its axis because fathers didn't do that. What was happening? And it's crazy because they're human, but we were so used to not seeing that picture, not as dire. Like I said, I still don't know what happened. I just know that it took a couple of years for me to evaluate and recenter my father for within my head, which was bizarre. But so I can definitely understand how that played with your head.
Yeah, and just, yeah, the whole grieving process, I write about that in my book. I talk about the grief spiral, and there's a destructive spiral as well, and all the symptoms of what it looks like. And I identified with most of those destructive spiral and grief spiral symptoms. And I think that if you're listening for a friend or a family member who has SLOD, somebody, those tips are very good for you to read those symptoms to identify what stage of grief they're in. And if they have some destructive symptoms, how to help them. And so when I started writing the book, I didn't think it was just going to be on grief, but it had to be. I couldn't go all over the map with promoting health and wellness, which is what my background is, 30 years as a wellness consultant, 6 years in the military as a medic, 15 years as a personal trainer and yoga instructor, kettlebell instructor, and then 18 years now in network marketing and the nutrition aspect. And so I was thinking, I was coming at it as Coach Cindy. And then I reread what I wrote after I had changed emotionally and spiritually, and everything changed. And I reread what I wrote and I thought, oh my God, what was I thinking writing some of these things? I was actually embarrassed for myself. What the hell was I thinking? And yeah, I just changed so much in this process. And I'm very grateful. My son did leave us a gift. It was, if there's a silver lining in something, I learned how to go inwards and really listen to my inner child or my higher self. There's lots of different terminology people can use. My soul self. I really did a deep dive because of this book. So it was very therapeutic, very cathartic for me to write it. And it wouldn't be the book it is today had I not waited the time for me to heal and learn and grow through it. Wow. And my spiritual, I had two editors, one for grammar and one for spiritual content and the flow. And boy, did she pull stuff out of me. I did not like her sometimes. I called a B word, a B with an itch word. Oh my gosh. It was, she
just the Cindy, I know
how to get in there and really piss me off. And
yes.
I wrote that up in the book, like she really knew how to push my buttons, but it was like a string. She knew how to pull that string and it unraveled me and it got me to the core of all of the stages of grief. And I was denying a lot of that I was imperfect. I was denying that I wasn't strong. I was denying that I was depressed. I was denying bargaining. And the bargaining aspect of the grief stage, I didn't realize till 2-3 years later that I was bargaining. It's like, how did I not see that? And so it sometimes takes somebody else who's like either a spiritual person or a grief counselor or someone who's dealt with grief themselves to really understand what you're going through. My spiritual editor had lost her husband at a young age due to alcohol. So basically that was suicide. And so she's been there as well. So I think it takes somebody who's lost somebody very close to them, like losing a son. There was no book out there that I really resonated with that talked about the death. Like I wanted to hear about it. Like I wanted the story. I wanted to hear the stages of how that parent got through it. And I had to write that book essentially. And I realized I was putting it off and putting it off, and I was thinking that it wasn't going to be good enough and this and that, all these things go through your mind. And is this going to help somebody? And then it got to the point just like a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know what? The book is ready. We've edited it. We've things around for flow. We've uncovered lots of different aspects of grief. I took a deep dive. I even went in, what happens after death? Because I refused to believe that my son was completely gone. Like he was cremated. And I'm not a religious person. And I wanted to know that I could connect with him on the other side. And I have to say that I have connected with him. I'm not a clairvoyant. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a medium. But there is a point where you get to where you do feel some kind of a connection. And I did a spiritual retreat at my house in July, and I had a shaman friend come from Nevada, and she took me through a sacred ceremony, and I did hear my son yell out, "Mom." And I said, "Did you hear that?" And she says, "Yeah, I did." And I was blown away. So if you feel like you're not going to connect again with your loved ones, I'm telling you, it is possible. I didn't know for sure if it was, but it had to take me time to get the level of elevation and out of grief. When you're in grief, it's one of your lower vibrations, and anger and some of the grief, anger, frustration, all of those are lower level vibrations, and you need to get to the point of joy and love for the higher vibration for you to be able to connect. And it took a long time for that to happen. I wanted it a lot sooner. I was begging, I was bargaining, I was going to the woods, and I was surrounding myself with nature and with meditation. And boy, I did a lot of different things to try to. I read the Bible. I joined a course on miracles, and that's a year-long program. There was just so many things that I did to try to just, I was just so hell-bent and not losing my.
It doesn't seem weird at all.
I know it
we're
seems
always
weird
looking for the connection. And
right.
To me, the odd thing is when we just slow down and stop. Yeah. All the signs are all around us.
That's what I had to do.
Those we love are all around us. We just have to stop and listen.
Yep. I talk.
And often we're so busy when we're listening, doing other things in our head and trying to make things happen that we're not really fully listening. So it does take a long time to get to a place where all the other stuff can fall away and you can really just listen. And one thing I wanted to say to the audience, I think it's so important. This book is not just for someone who lost their son or their daughter. This is really pertinent to suicide loss. It's pertinent to ideation. It's pertinent to mental health, because some of what Formi suggests in there and a lot of what she went through, she is very raw and real. There's no sugar coating, and she doesn't come off as goody two shoes in this book. Very real about herself, about her family. And I've known Cindy for a long time and have great respect for her as a person, as a business person, as a mom, or her wife. And more so now, because I'm reading this book, I was truly moved. I really saw that she had to go super, super deep to put all that on the page. And there's so much there that people can take away from, that you can use. There are never too many tools you can take to put in your virtual toolbox to help you get by, because I believe, and many like me believe, that when we get on the grief train, we have a ticket for life. And we can get off, we can go join somebody in a different car, but we always bring it with us in one form or another. The stages, we go back and forth. Some believe there are 5, 7, 9, whatever. The fact is, there is no time frame. There is no should be this or should be that. It is what it is. And if you continue to grieve, then I want you to do something else as well. I want you to continue to say their name. Say your loved one's name. Bring up the memories. The good, the bad, funny, keep them alive for you and everyone around you. And that's the other piece of keeping them alive for us. My grandchildren, my grandmother would have been their great, great grandmother, but they know her. They know her quirks. They know her sense of humor. They know all those things because she's part of our conversations when the family's together. And even the little one who's 9 can say, oh, Gran would have done such and such. And we will laugh because he's absolutely right. He's heard it his whole life, what she was like, mm-hmm. what she liked and what she didn't like, what she did. And that's mm-hmm. how we bring them along with us. What?
That's right. And I'm glad you're mentioning that, Elaine, because I like talking about our son. And I know for some people, they may think that they don't want to ask questions. Like my family, for instance, when I went home for the first time after Dylan passed, they didn't come to the celebration of life. They're 12 hours away and my mom isn't in a condition where she can drive more. And nobody asked me anything about my son. They didn't want to talk about it. It's like they were pretending that it didn't happen. But I did want to share his memory. I did want to talk about it. Because every time I talk about it, it reminds me of him and it keeps him alive. It keeps his spirit alive. And I think that's where the book, I think that Dylan guided me to do this book. And I asked the question, was I a good enough parent? And anybody who had a suicide, like one of my best friends, she's 22 years my senior. I talk about her in my book. Sally, she lost her daughter to suicide 10 months after I lost Dylan. And what I realize is that, yes, we do second guess ourselves as parents. Did we do enough? Could we have done something better? I talk about that in the book and rationalize it. I mince it out with myself and with my editor, and she is pulling stuff out of me. And what I realize in my spiritual learnings is that when we come to Earth, now, not everybody's going to believe this, and that's okay if you don't. What my husband doesn't believe in all the stuff that I believe in, and what I've written in the book, he doesn't believe in all of the things that I personally feel and learned. And that's okay if you have a spouse that's like completely different thinking than you, right? Most women and men are different anyway. I mean, very rare, I think, if you find the same spiritually aligned or emotionally aligned spouse, right? So that, just be aware of that. First of all, you can manage that. But what I realized was that when we come to Earth, we choose our family. So they chose you as parents for a reason, whatever that lesson is that we needed to learn and they needed to learn. They chose us as parents and they chose when they were going to die and how they were going to die. But when you're born, you forget about that. You don't remember that. And so it gave me peace knowing that regardless of what we did or didn't do as parents, he had a death date already predetermined, and he came to Earth to learn his lesson, whatever lessons those were. Maybe his lesson was for me as a parent to write this book to provide the grief information that people need to have. I'm not sure. Who really knows about anything?
Yes.
So that it gave me a sense of peace knowing that I had no control over his death. And I want to say to the suicide parents, you had no control over your child. They were their own soul. They were here for their own mission. And you did as good as you could with the tools that you had at the time. Right? We all want to be better parents than our old parents. And my daughter, I haven't released this on social media yet, but my daughter is pregnant and I'm going to be a grandparent. Yeah. Yeah. I'm quite excited. Yeah, she's due next March. And for her, like, she should want to be a better parent. Like, I think that she's a beautiful young lady. She's absolutely just heart-centered. And she is beautiful and inside and out. And I know that her children are going to be, I don't want to say perfect, because what is perfect, right? What is normal? What is perfect? But I know that they will be good people.
Yeah.
And the work that I've done spiritually could help the generational line 7 lines down and 7 lines backwards as well.
I just want to add to that spiritual bit.
From my
We're going to get a little esoteric here because I do this sometimes. My spiritual mentor, who my son dubbed the Holistic Missile, she went right to the heart of the matter always. She said that the soul chooses the ride. It's like a giant, Earth is like a giant amusement park. And the soul chooses, do they want the big rides, the roller coasters, the death drops, all the scary stuff, or do they want the teacups? Or maybe they want something in between. Every soul chooses that life that they want to live. That's where free will comes in. You can decide to stay on that path, or you can modify it in your time here.
Yeah.
Your beginning and ending, that was set, and that's the way things are. But the interesting thing, and I think part of what always kept me going, was she said souls travel in packs. So there's often you meet people and you don't know what it is about them, but they feel very known. There isn't a better word than that. It's like known. Yeah, you've known them your whole life. Kindred, exactly.
Kindred.
And those people you gravitate
towards.
And those are the people that I think we find in however many go-rounds we have, whatever lessons we're taking and learning and coming and going. The one thing that we cannot do as parents or siblings or children or what have you, we cannot exert our influence on their free will, because that's judgment, and judgment shouldn't come into it. And that's, for me, that's the only real law or rule that there is. We can try to be better people and do things better for others, but we have to do it without judgment. And I think that it's really relevant when we are in grief, when we have lost someone or many someone. It is, I think, imperative that we remember that, because when you go through the denial, when you go through the anger, you can become very judgmental. And that part of that grief spiral you have to be careful of. And you go through all of this in the book. I made a few notes while reading the book, and for our audience, just to give you an idea of something that I found really important. This is not a book that you just have to read from cover to cover. It's a book that you can take bits and go through them over and over again. And I found that there were like five themes across the book. And that authenticity over perfection, community and vulnerability, mind-body healing, and that's like rest, ritual, and physical self-care are super important. Continuing bonds that we have, even with those that are deceased, and that to me is saying their name, keeping pictures around, certain things that people love, acknowledging that to those around you, and purpose and legacy. Transforming grief into growth, I think, is super, super important. I honestly don't believe grief ever goes away. I think it's a core lesson that stays with us to remind us that things can be fleeting. And we need to be present in every moment for those around us. And I really took that to be reinforced by the book.
Yes, those are all good points, Elaine. Thank you for that.
There was so many areas that I think even my audience can use from your book. I think it's a really useful tome that many will be able to use. Now, what we need to know from you, when is this book going to be available?
It's at the formatters right now, and they're formatting it for Amazon. So he said once it hits Amazon, maybe tomorrow or the next day, it will take some days for it to fully complete, but I'm putting the 20th of October as a completion date on it. when people can sign up for notification on the release, and they will get the early bird pricing of either an ebook for about $2.99, and the paperback will be about $12.99, roughly. And so there might be even lower prices for the first couple of days. And if people purchase it on the first or second day, they will help drive the sales up and the recognition of it. And it will get in the hands of people who really need it. And this isn't just about for children, losing children. It could be for loss of anybody, or even life transitions like menopause, losing a job, having something in your life that really has gotten you down and gotten you stuck in an area where you don't think you can unstick yourself. And boy, I didn't even realize how stuck I was, even just up until the other day. I was, and it's 4 years later that I'm just really coming back to my businesses. I have three businesses, and I let all of that go. Nothing seemed important anymore. Making money, connecting with people, networking, endless Zoom calls and things like that. And I used to have a health podcast that I started when my son was 21. And I just, none of that seemed important after the passing of a child. And you'll probably relate if you did lose a child. And even if you've lost a spouse or a close family member, it's grief is grief. And no one can say when the end date is going to be for you. No one can tell you what you should feel. I had a friend who's in my wedding party, and she just lost her husband to esophageal cancer. And they only found it like 2 weeks before he died. He was stage four, and he died quite quickly. And I was sitting on the beach with her 2 weeks after she lost her husband of 32 years. And how am I supposed to feel? Like, am I supposed to be this emotional all the time? And I said, Rachel, there's no, you do you. And everything is okay when it comes to grief. There's going to be roller coasters. You'll feel okay one day. You'll feel not great the next day. You'll feel hopeless. You'll feel all these different feelings, and allow those feelings, feel them. Because if you suppress them and don't allow them to come out, then it's like stuffing them down into Pandora's box, and then something will explode. You'll have a heart attack or something like that. Or you'll just take care of yourself. Everything is okay. And that was my advice to her. Like I knew I had to go home for her to help her through it. And I'm so glad I did, because sometimes you need somebody that has been through it. And she knows that the loss of a child is one of the hardest things that you can ever go through.
I'm totally there with you.
I can't imagine.
I just wanted to say to the audience, that's the cover of the book that is on the screen now instead of me. The only thing that's not on that cover is my dark Pollyanna logo, which seems to be at the top. My apologies. It's on. Yes. Yeah, that's. Yeah.
And that's a dragon. And dragonflies are a good sign. They're very, very transformational and good luck. And when I was seeing lots of dragonflies in my yard, I actually had 9 of them in a chain on my leg one day. I took a picture.
And I also wanted to say,
blown away,
because you can't really understand it from this picture, but that is Dylan's bench that you're seeing in the forefront of the cover of the book, which I just think is beautiful. I will have a picture in the show notes that is a little better. It actually shows the engraving on the bench. Oh, good. That picture,
And it's actually on the inside of the book too, Elaine.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's on the dedication page at the front. Yeah. Wow.
I'm so relieved that you have brought yourself through to this other side and allowing yourself to find joy again, which is something that quite often we don't do. And it is critical for us to be able to find joy again after loss. And you were quite right in saying a loss can be any number of things. People don't realize how difficult it can be to lose anything, from a relationship to a job to a pet. A lot of times people don't realize how devastating that can be as well. And I am not saying one weighs the same as the other or doesn't. What I'm saying is we have to acknowledge that grief and loss are parts of life, and we have to be smart enough to allow ourselves, as you said, to feel them. Feelings, for the most part, are over in 90 seconds. If you allow yourself to feel and go on, you will have a much healthier, happier, and better life. And don't forget, October 20th is when the book will come out. Do yourself a huge favor and go get the book. I'm telling you, there's something in there for everyone. And I don't say that lightly. I am a voracious reader. I love books. But I did sing to Cindy before we came on. I have written a review for her because I really was blown away by how real she is. It takes an awful lot of fortitude to look at ourselves in the mirror and really see ourselves. And you did that. You absolutely did that. And for what I know, Dylan is so proud. Thank you. I am really honored to have had Cindy Little with us today. I'm Elaine Lindsay. This is Suicide Zen Forgiveness. And until next time, make the very most of your today, every day. Bye for now.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration of our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Trul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist Judy Croom, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach program in Toronto. Do you have a story to share? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest? Please go to SZF2.com. For our American listeners, that's SZF2.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again.